who is your God? Who is your God, Elijah? She asked in shock and disbelief, as though she really didn't know who I was anymore. Are you really even a Christian? She asked. You know, that's why I wanted to date you, right? You definitely don't act like one, so I can't do this anymore. And y'all, I was devastated. I had big hopes for this sixth grade relationship. We were supposed to be that couple in the Baton Rouge youth group world. And now a week in, things were already ending. What's up with that? So y'all want to know the story, right? So I'll tell you. I met her, Maria, at a local citywide youth group rally. You remember those? I was really in the zone that particular night. I was feeling the spirit. My hands were lifted up. And so the preacher called me down to pray. And I did. And I prayed a powerful prayer, y'all. It was fiery. Converted, I feel like maybe thousands. And so when I made my way back to my seat, she was sitting there. And we started talking. Now, Deanna, this might be a little bit before your time. We exchanged instant messenger screen names. That's AOL instant messenger screen names, millennial DMs, and chatted it up for a whole week. But then on Friday afternoon, right after I'd asked my mom to take me to the movies to meet a friend, she instant messengered me and said that she had some friends who went to my school, and she heard that I cuss a lot and that I was rapping. And that I liked to dance. I was cussing and rapping and dancing. And she thought I was a good Christian boy. And she wanted to know, are you really a Christian, Elijah? Who is your God? My sixth grade ex didn't know it at the time. But that question has plagued me my whole life. And perhaps I should bring it up in therapy while I'm still talking about my sixth grade ex. And here I am, 32 years old, 31 years old, trying to understand who is your God. In all seriousness, ain't that the question, though? Who is your God? Ain't that the question we've been exploring this week, this series, this year? Ain't that the question we've been asking as we've unpacked our origin, as we've been here the last 3 years under the leadership of Pastor Sally and Pastor Maria, these last 158 years as a church? Ain't that the question? Wasn't that the question when they first opened up the doors of this church that first Sunday of June in 1862, when they broke off from the E Street Church because their nation was in the midst of war? Their church was torn between their two sides. Weren't they wrestling with the question of who is our God? Weren't they trying to make sense of this question? Is our God a God who condones slavery? Is our God a God who legitimates every attempt at abolition? Who is our God? Weren't they wrestling with that question? And didn't their inability to answer that question leave us sort of in the quagmire we find ourselves in today? Isn't this the question that they asked as their population exploded in the 20th century, as many people moved to this city to support the military-industrial complex that was emerging because of two wars? Weren't this the question they were trying to make sense of while black folks were outside organizing for full citizenship rights and wanted to use our showers and our bathrooms for the March on Washington, but yet we took too long? Weren't they trying to make sense of this question, who is our God? Weren't you asking this question, who is our God, when white America was fleeing the city because of the shock and anger that black America was expressing when the race riots were happening in the city and in this neighborhood, and many were flocking out and fleeing to the suburbs? Weren't they trying to make sense of this question when they decided to stick around? When you decided to stick around, we decided to keep on coming. Weren't you trying to make sense of this question when you called your first woman pastor, when you started engaging people from El Salvador, engaging people from Burma, engaging people who were black, engaging people who are queer, weren't you trying to make sense of this question? When you called Sally and Maria, when you called a lesbian couple to be your pastors, aren't we still trying to make sense of this question? Who is our God? When we hear from black preaching, when we hear from black women preachers, when we hear from a black queer woman preachers, isn't that the question? Who is our God? When I think about the history of this congregation, I do believe that we've asked this question, and we've asked this question in good faith at every time in our history. I trust that the people who gathered here over the years were gathered here for a reason, for a purpose, hopeful and expectant of God, wanting her direction, her wisdom, wanting to know how they should live their lives in their world. In their context, I can trust and say that earnestly for 158 years, we have wrestled with the right question. And yet, in our wrestling, we have not always gotten the right answer. We've asked the right question, but we haven't always gotten the right answer. Before we go any further, Calvary, we must name that. The right question is, who is our God? But the right answer, to get to the right answer, we have to do more work. We have to engage more resources, learn from more experiences, study other traditions, see God from a different angle, understand the conditions that oppressed people have tried to make sense of and have brought an answer for themselves of who is our God and what is her essence. See, if we look at this text this morning, we see that this is the question the people of Israel are wrestling with. They are now free. Pharaoh's army is long behind them. The memory of crossing the Red Sea is fresh in their minds, but they still have to answer this question. They wrestle with it because they find themselves hanging out in the wilderness waiting for Moses. He's gone, supposedly talking to God. But Lauren, they don't see any of the evidence of that progress. So they are annoyed. He's been up there for 40 days and 40 nights, and they're weary of waiting for him. The text says that because Moses was delayed, because Moses had taken too long of a time, because Moses had been gone too long, because they could not see the material evidence of what God and Moses were doing, they decided to make their own God. They could not see the material evidence of what God and Moses were doing. So they decided to make their own God. Have you been tempted to make your own God because you cannot see the material evidence of what God is up to? Are you tempted to make your own God because God has delayed in answering some of your prayers? Are you tempted to make your own God because you do not see how these things work together for your good? Are you tempted to make your own God? The text says that Aaron came and they made gods with their jewelry, their gold, some of the wealth that they had acquired in the empire, even as slaves. Aaron produced a god for them, manufactured a god for them, made a god for them. Why would he make a god for them when they know the living God? Why would he manufacture a god for them? Why do so many of us need a manufactured God? Why do so many of us need a God produced by earthly wealth, by industrial capitalism, by imperial gold? Why do so many of us believe in a manufactured God? Why do so many of us put our faith in a manufactured God? Why do so many of us rely on an image of God that was man-made? You do know we are attached to a golden calf-like image of God, right? You do know that so much of the reason behind why many of us struggle to wrap our minds around the God of the weary years, the God of the Exodus, the God of the liberation, the God of the black religious imagination, is because our image of God is rooted in material wealth. It's rooted in a social hierarchy, an intellectual hegemony of a white European supremacist world order. And this is true even if you are not white. See, that tradition, if you want to call it that, really it's more of a superstructure, Rick, is man-made. Willie Jennings argued that it first began to happen around 1444 as the Portuguese started engaging Africans off of their coast. And then continued a little bit more in 1455 as the Portuguese and the Spanish split the rest of the known world into their two parts and gave each other, under the authority of the Pope, dominion over all of it to subjugate the people and the land to be found and that were already there. But then it was solidified in 1492 when Columbus stumbled his way into Arawak territory. And then all of us, black and white, Latino and Asian, all of us that now engage in this religious tradition that is Christian is affected by the cultural imperialism, the capitalist economic order, and even the Western democratic tradition that has been engaged with the image of this God that has been made for us. Y'all hear me? This God, much of what Christians do is worship this golden calf-like God. And that God is not the living God. That God is not the God who freed the people of Israel. That God is not the God that our ancestors who knew suffering knew. That God is not the God that loves us and knows us and seeks and chases after us. That God is the image of the golden calf made for the purposes of giving imperial credit to what God has done. Imperial credit for what God has done. Y'all, you may not see it, but too many of us believe in this fake golden calf God made for us to assimilate and accommodate to our oppression. Most of us don't know that our images of God were drawn up in the castles of Western Europe, in the boardrooms of New England, on the plantations of the American South. Most of our images of God, before they got to us, had to be approved by Ferdinand and Isabella, by Henry VIII and Louis XIV, by George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, by Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee. It had to work for them first before it could get to us. Because they were using it for the purposes of building a stolen society on stolen land by using stolen labor. They had to come up with an image of God that supported that, and that is the socio-historical, geopolitical lens. And before we can really know anything about God, we must first stop and name that that is the image of God that most of us have. And see, this text is trying to help us this morning because it shows that there is a conflict, a tension, a battle, a fight between the living God who frees us and the manufactured God who we make. Do you see that manufactured God? Do you see the gold you've put on that God, the diamonds you have adorned that God with, the silver you dress that God up with? Do you see the stuff that you put on that God, the ideology you put on it, the politics, the bigotry, the sexism, the racism? Do you see how you've created this God in your own image and how this God is causing so much harm to the world? Do you see that we have neglected the God of our freedom and traded that God in for the God of our own making because we are too afraid to deal with the true meaning of the God of our freedom? Do you see how we've neglected the God of our freedom for the God of our own making, possibly because we are too afraid to deal with the true meaning of the God of our freedom? Have you traded the living God for the God of your own making? Have you traded the living God for the God of the golden calf? Have you traded the God who loves you and calls you and promised to never leave you or forsake you for the God of the United States of America, white racist capitalism? Have you abandoned the living God for the God of Goldman Sachs and for the God of government benefits and the God of 401k and the God of the safety of the suburbs and the seeming security of whiteness? Have you abandoned the living God? See, in our text this morning, they know what they are doing. They know that they are abandoning the living God, and they do it anyways. They make up their own God anyways. They worship it. They offer it a feast. They do all that because they know what they're doing. But the question is, do we? Do we know what we are doing? Do you know what you are doing? Do you know who has produced the image of God that you have? And if you do, if you're not okay with it, are you willing to change it out? Are you willing to rebuild it, to restructure it, to reimagine it, to return to the image of the living God? See, I won't make a big fuss about this, and I promise you I'm almost done, but I think it's important for me to say that this whole sermon, this whole series, the whole point of preaching like this, of having you read James Cone and Gayroyd Wilmore and Michelle Alexander and Kelly Brown Douglas, the whole point of Raquel being here last week and Dr. Harrison being here the week before and Nichelle being here a few years ago and Julian being here and Deanna being here and Dr. Wiley being here in each and every year of the Seven Last Words led by black women and black queer people and black academics, that the whole point of this here, what we're doing, the whole point of lifting up the black religious and moral and spiritual imagination, the whole point of grappling with black history, of honoring black pioneers, the whole point of doing all of this, because I believe that they are the ones who have held on to the least corrupted image of God. I believe that they are the ones who have held on to the least corrupted image of God that more closely aligns to that of the living God that we see here in the Bible. See, in their many religious traditions, in their plural religious traditions, in the long durée of their suffering, in their life, in their hundreds of years of struggle, in having to make meaning of struggle, in having to try to grasp freedom, they understand something perhaps even better than the people of Israel understand this question in our text this morning. They understand something about the nature and essence of God. They understand that the God who is with them, the God who loves them, the God who frees them, the God who liberates them, the God who sends them to go before Pharaoh is in fact the living God. They understand that while the church has had a continuous existence for 2,020 years, the Spirit of God has not always been with the church. And the Spirit of God will not always be with the church, especially if it condones violence against human bodies in all its form. They understand that God wants all of her children to be free from all forms of bondage, all forms of bondage, all forms of bondage, social, political, economic, cultural, theological, spiritual, all forms of bondage. They understand that in order for God to do that, that in order for them to be a part of God's doing, that in order for them to experience the freedom for themselves, they have to stay faithful, y'all, to the living God. They have to go where she goes. They have to claim that freedom for themselves. They have to throw out doctrine that doesn't work for their bodies. They have to develop new rituals that do. They have to abandon institutions that oppress them and make new ones that affirm them. They have to renege on beliefs that are harmful and imagine another way of being. They have to reject the gods of the golden calf produced for them for the purpose of empire and claim the living God who brought them out of slavery. What do you think about that? No. How do you feel about that? No. How does that sit with you? Y'all do know that that knowing that they have ain't just for them. It's for us too. It's for you too. They've helped you. They've produced a rich theological and spiritual discourse that we can tap into that's just as, if not more sophisticated than our Western theological canon. That's what I'm trying to say. That a bunch of slave folk, a bunch of people who were told they were nobody, actually understand the nature and essence of God better than anyone else. They produce a rich theological and spiritual discourse that we must tap into if we are to know ourselves. If we are to free ourselves, if we are to know God, we must claim the God that they know. We must know the God that they claim. We can be covered by this same God. We can know this living God. We can know the God of the weary years, the God of the silent tears. We can know a God that will bring us this far and keep on pushing us. Calvary, do you know the living God? Do you know the God of my ancestors? Do you know the God of the weary years? Do you know the living God? Do you know Moses' God? Do you know Zipporah's God? Do you know Hagar and Tamar's God? Do you know the living God? Do you know Jeremiah's God and Ezekiel's God and Amos's God and Micah's God? Do you know the living God? Do you know Mary's God and Martha's God and John the Baptist's God? Do you know the living God? Do you know Equiano's God and Nat Turner's God and Harriet Tubman's God and Daniel's God? Do you know the living God? Do you know the God of the oppressed, the God who rescues from the Nile, the God who speaks from the burning bush, the God who uses black magic to save you, the God who moves behind you to protect you from your enemy, the God who sends you her prophets over the years? Do you know the living God? The God of black religion, the God of Latin American liberation theologian, the God of our mother's gardens, the God of the oppressed. Do you know that God? And are you willing to follow her? That is the right question. The right answer. That's up to us.